Call the House Resources Committee meeting today to order. Today is January 29th, 2024. We are in room 124. We have present with us Representative Dibert, Representative McCabe, Representative Baker, Representative Rauscher, and myself, Representative Chairman Tom McKay. We do have a quorum to do business. And, oh, Representative Sadler has now just joined us. Thank you, Representative Sadler. I'd like to thank the staff, Zach, Justin, and Ed, for helping us run the meeting today. And please silence your cell phones, everyone, so that we're not disturbed by that. So, today we have three items on the agenda: House Bills 243, 272, and 281. We will look at House Bill 243 first. So I will now bring House Bill 243 related to bison permits back before the House Resources Committee. Final business. Are there any further questions for the bill's sponsor? Seeing none, my office received no amendments on House Bill 243. So I would like to determine what is the will of the committee, and Mr. Vice Chairman will entertain a motion.
Motion to report HB 243. Mr. Chairman, I move to report House Bill 243, Work Order 33-LS1129/A from the committee with individual recommendations and one attached fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Seeing no objection, House Bill 243 has been reported from the House Resources Committee with one attached fiscal note. We will now take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Okay, I'd like to bring the House Resources Committee back to order. We are now dealing with House Bill 272. I will now bring House Bill 272 related to big game hunting before the House Resources Committee. The Department of Fish and Game will present the bill on behalf of the governor. Presenters are Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang, Joe Falco, Legislative Liaison, Louis Cusack, Executive Director of the Safari Club, and Ira Edwards representing himself. Let's see, Louis and Ira are on the line. Can you hear us all right, Louis and Ira?
Yes, sir.
Yes, that is correct. I'm going to stay on mute until you call on me.
Okay, thank you. How about Representative Armstrong or Representative Mears? No? Okay, we'll watch for them if they jump on. Okay, Commissioner Vincent Lang, could you please present your bill today?
Yeah. Good morning. For the record, my name is Doug Vincent Lang, Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Last year, the Board of Game tried to establish a hunt for disabled hunters in Kincaid, Alaska, City Park, to deal with some wildlife issues they were having there. And that passed the Board of Game, and upon advice or review of the Department of Law ruled that there was not statutory authority to create a hunt for a special class of citizens, in this case, disabled hunters. So this bill would basically create the statutory authority for the Board of Game to create a hunt for disabled hunters, including disabled veterans and a variety of other classes. It's very similar to the youth hunts that are created across the state where the legislature has granted the Board of Game the authority to create special class of hunts for youth hunters across the state. To qualify, a person must be at least 70% physically disabled. Qualifying persons participating in the hunt must be accompanied by a licensed hunter capable of retrieving game. And this is very important. It's a permissive statutory change. It doesn't create any hunts. It just allows the Board of Game to take, through its public process and its regulatory process, proposals from the public to create hunts for disabled hunters across the state. Any proposal to establish such a hunt and regulation would have to go through a very involved board process, including public notice, review by the department, local advisory committees, and public comment. And again, the department supports this bill as it gives the Board of Game the option to provide unique hunting opportunities for Alaska's disabled hunters and promotes more outdoor recreation activity in the state. The Board of Game has shown support for the idea through their prior actions, and this bill would provide the board with the statutory foundation to consider such proposals in the future. I want to also make it clear that just if you pass this bill, it does not automatically authorize the hunt in Kincaid Park. That hunt was authorized by the Board of Game, but the municipality of Anchorage still has a responsibility in that process moving forward as a landowner to be permissive to allow that hunt to continue. So it wouldn't automatically authorize that hunt, but it would allow the Board of Game to create the foundations and for those hunts moving forward. And with that, I'll turn it over to Joe to run through a sectional if you wish.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Well, let's do the sectional then, Mr. Falco, and then we can have questions.
Joe Falco, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Fish and Game. Section 1 of the bill provides the statutory authority for the Board of Game to establish hunts limited to individuals with physical disabilities. Section 2 is a transition section, providing the Board of Game authority to adopt regulations necessary to implement the bill. Section 3 is an immediate effective date for Section 2. And Section 4 is an effective date of January 1, 2025 for all other provisions. That's the end of the sectional.
Okay, thank you. We have a question from Representative Rausch.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, I think it's a great bill, but I do want to know a few things. Do we know how many hunters this might affect?
We don't, but we can look at our numbers for permanent IDs, through the chair, and give you some information on that.
And then I guess the last thing is if a hunter is too disabled to be able to pull the trigger, how does that work? How does that work?
My understanding is still the responsibility of the disabled hunter to pull the trigger. That's their animal. So,
okay, thank you.
We'll get you the exact numbers regarding that first question. We do have the number of licenses that are issued for disabled hunters across the state. We'll get you that. But in terms of youth hunts, even though there's a lot of youth in our state, there's a relatively limited amount of people that participate in those hunts. And of course, they're going to be in areas that may not allow a lot of hunters to get to them, some of these areas. So, yeah, I don't expect you're going to have a lot of participation, but in those cases where you have participation, I think it'll be very valued by those individuals.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, Representative McCabe has a question.
Thank you. So, yeah, I have a question. It's possible to be 70% disabled and still be able to carry game out of the field. You can get a military disability of 70% for various things. It's all sort of, I think tinnitus is 10%, and so it's cumulative. So you can be disabled more than 70% and still carry game. So can you go hunt by yourself? Because you are, in fact, capable of retrieving the game.
So I think that would be in the discretion of the Board of Game to decide whether you have to have a hunter in those cases. So those individuals could participate in a general hunt already. So I think they would have to decide whether they want to participate in the general hunt or the disabled hunt under the conditions that the board sets.
Okay, thanks. Representative Sadler, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I generally approve of the intent of the bill, but I've got several specific questions about it, and I've got a series. I'll ask a few, then with your indulgence. First of all, I see in the sponsor statement the definition of how a person's disability would be established. The language itself in the bill just says a person with physical disabilities. I don't see a definition of that anywhere. Are you, through the chair, Mr. Commissioner, are you anticipating the board would come up with regulations to define what is actually a disabled person?
I'll take that one. Joe Felkel, for the record, through the chair, there is a statutory definition for a person with physical disabilities, and that is what the letter is referencing. I can get you that statutory site after this hearing.
And it might be better to actually have that reference in the legislation itself. A follow-up?
Yes, sir.
I have seen this issue come before the legislature and trying to provide for state parking passes at state parks for people who are disabled, and it kind of ran a crop around the question of who is qualified to determine that disability. The questions Representative McCabe raised are pertinent. There is some information to say that any physician could verify that disability, and I guess we'd have to have a definition of physician. There are different classes of healthcare providers who would like to have that authority, so I would want to see a more precise definition of physician. And the third line of question I just ask is the question of having an accompanying hunter raises a whole bunch of questions. Would include, is that person have to carry their own personal hunting permit? Is there have to be any nexus of relationship? What will that accompanying hunter be able to do and prescribed for doing? There's a lot of details that need to be filled in on that. I'll just invite the commissioner to speak on that.
Yeah, so let me answer the second question first. So a person would have to qualify this hunt, would have to have a license issued by the department for a disabled hunting license. So that's already in statute what is necessary to qualify for that license. So before they could participate in that hunt, they would have to hold that license. So in essence, they've self-qualified through that licensing requirement. Regarding who can go in and help, I don't think that this legislation specifies whether it has to be second degree of kindred or anything like that. It's anybody that wants to go help this individual. Do they have to carry a firearm? I guess that's up to them. But again, the primary responsibility to hunt that animal rests with the disabled hunter in this case. And if another individual wanted to carry a firearm, I think they could. But there is no degree of kinship, relationship, or anything else. It's just getting somebody to go out and help and give this person some type of an opportunity to get out and hunt without the crowds associated with a general hunt.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Vincent Lang. Any other questions from the committee?
Yeah,
perhaps it was Sadler.
Looking around, no one else does.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Through the chair. I see physical disabilities, and in the disabilities world, there has been a desire to equate physical to include mental intellectual disabilities under the category of disabilities. So I guess for intent purposes, would the commissioner please let me know if the intent of the bill is to include mental disabilities or healthcare, mental health disabilities as well as physical? And if so, where would that definition be?
It's the current definitional requirement to obtain a disabled hunting license, which I don't think includes mental disabilities.
And the follow-up, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
For the record, Joe Felkel, if I could just expand on both previous answers given. So I did find the statutory definition for a person with physical disabilities is under AS 6.05-940-26. Wow. There is a statutory definition for a person with mental disabilities, and that does not apply to this legislation.
Very good. And what is that mental? What's that say?
I don't have that one in front of me. Right. I'll have to get that back to the committee. And to expand a little bit further on the other previous answer given, the only qualification for the accompanied hunter must be that they have a valid hunting license and are capable of retrieving the game.
Okay. And I guess I'm going to say that I'm a little bit nonplussed. I did not know that there was currently a disabled hunter license. And I'll note that this bill specifically only speaks to creating special big game hunting seasons. So I guess I'd like to know a little bit more about what the current, you keep referencing the statute describing what a disabled hunting permit is. Please expound on that and what was the origin of that and how is that working out?
It's working out very well. I think it was a desire to, by the legislature, to create a reduced fee license for disabled hunters across the state. And so they created it. It's not causing us any hardship in issuing that license. And we think, again, it's an opportunity to get disabled hunters out into the field at a reduced price. So, yeah, we have no trouble with that.
So for the record, that was Commissioner Vincent Lang responding to a question from Representative Sadler. Any further questions? Representative Sadler?
Last one. Thank you for indulging, right. Mr. Chair. I guess I would say, so if there is currently a program to provide hunting permits, special hunting permits for those with physical disabilities, can the commissioner tell us, is that not operating sufficiently such that it's necessary to also set aside specific hunting seasons for these people?
Yeah, so that just issues a reduced fee license to the hunter. It does not allow the statutory foundation to create a special area hunt or a special hunt for these people that qualify for that license. The bill in front of you creates a statutory foundation to create a special hunt opportunity for these people holding these licenses.
And thanks for indulging.
Okay. Are there any other questions from members of the committee? Going once. All right. Very good then. Thank you for the line of questioning. And I will set an amendment deadline for... in my office by noon on Monday, February 5th, and we will hold House Bill 272 in committee until next week.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record, and I beg your pardon. We did have two individuals that wanted to testify, and forgive me for skipping that step. So we will now bring the bill back up, House Bill 272, and we will now hear from Louis Cusack. Can you hear me, Louis?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Chairman McKay and members of the House Resources.
Yeah, Louis, apologies for almost losing you guys there. Can you please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony?
Yes, sir. My name is Louis Cusack. I'm the Executive Director for SCI Alaska Chapter. I'm calling in today on behalf of the 1,200 members of Safari Club International Alaska Chapter in support of House Bill 272. I, along with Doug and others, have already mentioned the bill that established precedents for this to pass. And I will go on record also saying not only do we support the bill, but if a season were to be established, like we've done with Purple Heart veterans and our Wounded Warriors on Safari program, we will, through our humanitarian process, ensure that we do what we can to help ensure that not only is a season established, but that we make sure that we allow the opportunity and support the individuals with disabilities in being able to participate and hopefully harvest some of their own wild game.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cusack. Are there any questions for Mr. Cusack? Representative McCabe.
Yeah, thanks. Mr. Cusack, I'd just like to say thanks for your advocacy for this bill and for hunts and for hunters in general. I think this is it's fabulous that SCI supports this and supports disabled hunters and military veteran hunters and all you do for hunters and for game management, responsible game management in the state.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rep. McCabe. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. McCabe, I'm a member of SCI and understand you have many national and international connections. Do you know of any other states, sir, that actually currently provide special seasons for disabled hunters?
Was that a question for me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head. I do know that there are some states that have, you know, special hunts for disabled citizens. I don't know if there's a special season established.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Rauscher. Yeah. For the record, that was Mr. Louis Cusack who answered that question. A little bumpy today. Okay. Ira Edwards, can you hear me?
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ira Edwards. I am a physically disabled person representing myself here today.
Okay, please begin your testimony, Mr. Edwards.
Okay, thank you. I've been working on creating a hunting opportunity for physically disabled hunters for a little bit over 10 years now. We've gotten this far through the legislative process and the Board of Game process. And Mr. Vincent Lang was correct that there are probably a relatively few number of disabled veterans hunting licenses issued. There are no opportunities for non-veterans to qualify for any of that. And I am paralyzed and in a wheelchair. I was a state law enforcement officer and not a veteran. So it would be, there were some questions about how many people might benefit from this. There are some disabled veterans that have licenses, but there are also other disabled individuals in the state of Alaska that do not qualify under the veterans license statute. Another question was asked, Alaska is currently the only state in the union without a hunting opportunity for physically disabled people. There is the Veterans Purple Heart Hunt up in Delta Junction, which this law would allow to continue on, but that is available only to Purple Heart recipients that are disabled veterans, not to the general public that might have a physical disability. The other question that was asked was, with a definition of disability in the veteran status, yes, you can be 70% disabled and still go hunting. I know people that are 100% disabled veterans that have run Boston Marathon. And this hunt opportunity would be for physically disabled hunters. That is quite a bit different than someone who's having a disability status. So that would reduce the number of people as well, to people that physically cannot get out there on their own. I very much appreciate the commissioner and the governor for helping push this forward.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Edwards. Any questions for Mr. Edwards from the committee? All right, seeing none, we will, do we have anyone else that would wish us to testify? Representative Sadler, a question has arisen.
Thank you. And actually, this is Mr. Edwards. Through the chair, Mr. Edwards, you said you've known 100% disabled people who have run the Boston Marathon. I wonder if you could expound on that a little bit. That seems to be just a tish counterintuitive. Help me understand that if you would, please.
The military method of determining disability does not include physical damage. PTSD is considered a disability. You could also be missing an arm. That's considered a disability. That is not a mobility disorder. So there are a lot of types of disability that do not reduce mobility.
Thank you for that.
Okay.
Addition is I am considered 79% disabled with my paralysis.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Edwards. And we hope that this, bill would be put in place and you could enjoy a hunt very soon. So with that, I'll go back to where I was before. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? All right, we will now close testimony. Whether I'm not supposed to do that or not. All right. We will set an amendment deadline of noon on Monday, February 5th to my office, and we will hold House Bill 272 in committee until next week. Okay, we'll take a brief at ease while we reset the table for House Bill 281. I now call the House Resources Committee back to order. We are now taking up House Bill 281. I bring it before the committee. House Bill 281 deals with recreational cabins. The Department of Natural Resources will present the bill on behalf of the governor. We have the presenter today is Director Christy Collis. Welcome to the committee, Director Collis. Good to see you again. And let's go ahead and begin your presentation.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon, committee members. For the record, my name is Christy Collis. I'm the director for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Thank you for inviting me to present on the Remote Recreational Cabin Sites legislation, House Bill 281. Settling and developing our lands is inherent in our Constitution. This legislation provides a variety of opportunities to meet both our constitutional mandates as well as the governor's agenda to get more lands into Alaskans' hands. House Bill 281 would repeal and reenact the existing Remote Recreational Cabin Sites Staking Program statute to increase opportunities for Alaska residents to permit, lease, and purchase state land for remote recreational cabin sites. The bill outlines a process to be followed when the commissioner offers available land and the ability for the public to nominate land to be permitted, leased, or purchased, and directs the commissioner to establish regulations to implement the program. The bill provides for the commissioner to annually identify areas where land is properly classified, publish and provide public notice for an annual schedule of land offerings, and offer those lands for staking. It also allows Alaskans to nominate 10 acres of unencumbered land for remote recreational sites to be staked by an eligible applicant. The commissioner could then approve the nomination without a written best interest finding. If the nominated land is not properly classified, the commissioner may classify or reclassify it per existing statutes. The applicant would be responsible for administrative costs associated with the classification process. After approval, the applicant who nominated the land would have 90 days to stake the land, or it would be moved into the regularly scheduled offering. So now we'll go through a little bit more detail of what the different authorizations entail. The bill would provide for a permit to be issued for a remote recreational site for a 5-year term with additional 4 term renewal periods. The permits may not be assigned and would be revocable at the discretion of the commissioner and may be terminated, including for any reason, including failure to use the permitted land as required by the terms of the permit. The permittee would be eligible to lease or purchase the site, and if the land subject to the permit is offered for sale or lease, the commissioner shall first offer that site to the permittee. All right, so now we have the leasing option. The bill would establish a process for leasing a remote recreational site with an initial 10-year term and 2 additional 10-year lease renewal periods. Leases may not be assigned, and the lease can be terminated for noncompliance. The lessee may purchase the site at any time during the term of the lease. We move into purchase. The bill would establish a process for Alaskans to stake and purchase a piece of state land for a remote recreational site. This process requires the applicant to pay the cost for appraisal, survey, and platting the site, and for the commissioner to set the sale at fair market value. All right, so you've all seen this map. What lands are available for this program? This map represents all the different major ownership across the state of Alaska. All state-owned land is represented in blue. State land is classified through a planning process that undergoes agency and public engagement. Classification of state land assists the department in making decisions on development and disposals. The department must also classify lands prior to a disposal. Types of classifications are agricultural, coal, forestry, geothermal, grazing, material, mineral, oil and gas, heritage resources, public recreation, reserved use, resource management, transportation corridors, waterfront development, water resources, wildlife habitat, and settlement. The settlement classifications are the lands identified for disposal into private ownership. If land is not designated as settlement, then a reclassification can be considered and would follow an existing process already set out in statute. So here's a map showing the lands statewide that are already classified settlement. There are approximately 3,544,344 acres of land already classified. So a little bit more zoomed in view of our northern region, where there is 1,309,586 acres classified as settlement. South Central, we have 2,167,824 acres. And in Southeast, there are 66,932 acres classified settlement. If there's no questions, I can go through the sectional next.
Okay, let's just pause for a moment. Any questions from the committee at this point? Okay, please do the sectional, Director Collis.
All right. Section 1 amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska to add a statement of purpose. Section 2 amends AS 38-05035E, outlining the powers and duties of the director of the Division of Lands, to add a new E6I, stating the director is not required to issue a written finding before approval of a remote recreational cabin site permit lease or sale under AS 38-05600, which is our remote rec cabin site. Section 3 amends AS 38-05045, the statute stating that in general, but with some exceptions, all land owned in fee by the state may be sold as provided in AS 38-05045 through 0.069 and in AS 38-08. To add that this statute does not prevent the disposition of land as provided in AS 38-05600. Section 4 amends 38-05065B, the statute providing terms of a contract for sale, to state that a contract for land sold under AS 38-05600, to add a requirement for installment payments of no more than 20 years on a level payment basis at interest rates set by AS 38-05065I. Section 5 amends AS 38-05125A, the statute listing reservations for contracts for sale, lease, or grant of state land, and each deed to state land properties or interest in state land, to add AS 38-05600 to the list of statutes subject to the reservations laid out in 0.125A. Section 6 amends AS 38-05600 by repealing the existing remote recreational site statute and reenacting it as follows. A states the commissioner shall provide for the permitting, lease, and sale of state land for remote recreational sites to eligible applicants as described in B and C. B states the commissioner shall publish an annual schedule of land offerings that list areas available for staking of remote recreational cabin sites. The department will provide public notice of the annual schedule and applicants may apply for sites. C states the eligible applicants may nominate unencumbered land and apply for a permit, lease, or sale of up to 10 acres of state land that is not included in the commissioner's schedule of offerings. D states that the commissioner may classify or reclassify nominated land if nominated land is not classified to allow for remote recreational cabin sites. The applicant would be responsible for all administrative costs associated with reclassification. The department shall provide public notice of the nomination And if the applicant fails if the applicant fails, the commissioner may include the land in the annual schedule of offerings. E states that the commissioner may issue a permit to an eligible applicant for a term of not more than 5 years. The permit could be renewed up to 4 times for 5 years per renewal. Permits are revocable at will and may be terminated by the commissioner for any reason. The permittee is eligible to lease or purchase the site, and if the land subject to the permit is offered for sale or lease, the commissioner shall first offer the site to the permittee. F states the commissioner may issue a lease for a term not more than 10 years with 2 10-year renewals. A lease may be terminated by the commissioner if a lessee fails to use the land according to the terms of the lease. The lessee may purchase the site at any time during the lease. G states that the annual fees for permits and leases shall be set by the commissioner in accordance with AS 3805073M to ensure the state receives a fair return. After the termination of a permit or lease, improvements or personal property remaining on the land shall be handled as provided in AS 3805090. A lease or permit may not be assigned. H states that sales must be at fair market value at the time of entry, and the purchaser must pay the cost of appraisal, survey, and platting. I states the commissioner may adopt regulations to implement this section, and J provides definitions for eligible applicant and resident. Section 7 amends the uncodified law by adding a new section relating to transition, stating that a lease executed under AS 3805600 before the effective date of this act and in effect on the effective date of this act is eligible for renewal under AS 3805600 as repealed and reenacted in Section 6 of this bill. Section 8 provides for an immediate effective date under AS 0110070C. That concludes the sectional analysis, and I also have a fiscal note if you'd like me to go over that.
Okay, why don't we finish the fiscal note, and then we can have a lot of questions.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right, so for the fiscal note, in FY 2025, we would be asking for $731,800 for 5 positions. We're looking for a surveyor, a manager to run this program. It's going to have a lot more elements in our current program. A specialist 3 that would be, we have 2 specialist 3, one that would help us with reclassifications, another one that would do the adjudications of the nominations, and also helping with the commissioner's schedule of land offerings, and then also a specialist 2 that would assist with both of those actions. So they would support the adjudication of the program. And then after the initial setup in 2025, we'd be looking for $706,800 annually to pay for those positions.
Okay. Thank you, Director Collis, for that detailed presentation. So are there any questions from the committee? I have one. Just to get us kicked off, if I was to purchase a remote lot and build a cabin on it, one problem I can see is access. Let's say there's private property between, let's say I buy the property off the Parks Highway, and there's a big block of private property between me and my lot, between the highway and the lot. Am I allowed access through private property to get to it on, let's say, snow machines or ATVs? That seems like that could be a pretty common problem. How do we get around that?
Chair McKay, so we would have to be looking at those on a case-by-case basis. So this program is something that we already run, but it doesn't have the permit and lease element. It just has the sales. But we put those areas out and offer those for people to stake. But that is something that we look at, is access. So if it is a parcel that someone is nominating, then we are going to be needing to look at access to see if there is legal access. Maybe it's actually by a lake and they could land their float plane, or they have a snow machine and there's section line easements that they can use. So it really just depends on the specific location and all of those parameters surrounding it.
Okay, so the way I understand, then you wouldn't sell me a parcel that I couldn't get to legally. I think that would be a pretty important function for this staff to take care of.
Chair McKay.
Right?
Yes, that is something that we would definitely want, is that people would have legal access. We do not want to create conflict between private ownership and new ownership and not having access to. We deal with a lot of access conflict currently, right. And we would not want to create more.
Okay. Representative McCabe had a question.
Thank you. Thank you for presenting this, Director Collis. So I think I understand this, but maybe to put it on the record for members of the public that might be watching, can you define remote recreational cabin sites as opposed to non-remote and maybe not a cabin site? I think there's a difference in those, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it would be good to kind of get that on the record.
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, yes. So currently we have our subdivision sales, and those subdivision sales are a lot of times off of off highways, and we can build roads. Where the remote recreational sites are usually going to be more remote, where access is something that we have to look at. Do they have a lake that they could land on? And it is going to be something that's not going to be right on the road system. It is going to be more remote. Maybe they're going to reach it by snow machine, and they're going to use the riverway to get there every year and by boat in the summer. So yes, these are not going to be right off the road system type sites.
Follow up, Representative McCabe.
Yeah, maybe can we explore that just a little bit? So, I mean, you could be off the road system a mile and have a trail to walk in there or something. Is there a tighter definition? To me, remote means leap in a floodplain or get on a snow machine and go up the Susitna, 10 or 15 miles. But to somebody else, remote might mean a mile off the parks up north of Willow, kind of remote, and they can, they have to walk there. So is there any kind of a tighter definition, or is it something that you folks figure out at the time?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, I can't think of a definition that we actually have on the books for this one. I think it is something that, Alaska's remote in itself, right? So, yes, you're right. I think it's case-by-case basis on whether we would consider it remote or not. So if somebody does nominate the land, it's something we will have to look at. I think this is going to be something we will put in our regulations as well.
Thanks.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support the governor's efforts to put more Alaska lands in Alaskan hands. It's a noble goal, and I think Alaskans will be grateful for that. It's a complicated program, and there's lots of ins and outs. I have a couple brief questions about things that might scope it and explain it to folks watching. First, this is to provide leases for recreational sites, not for commercial sites. And but in Section 6, subparagraph E speaks of the commissioner's ability to issue a permit for 5 years up to 4 years, four times renewable. A permit to do what? Because the bill primarily addresses leasing the land. What's that permit referenced in E, please?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. So this program actually does cover permits, leases, and sales. So a permit will give you the right to actually build a cabin on state land, which you could then turn into a lease, or you could turn into a purchase if the area allows it. There are some areas that maybe we have personal use cabins. I think some people know about them, also referred to as duck shacks. They could be located in legislatively designated areas. So we may not be able to sell that land to the individual, but we could issue a permit. So this just gives us a host of options for being able to authorize these types of structures.
Well, Representative Sadler.
So it's fair to say this is not specifically to lease. This is kind of almost a rent-to-own kind of thing. This is public land that people can get a lease of up to 30 years total to enjoy exclusively. But it could lead to permitting a cabin, and could lead to sales of that that cabin to the person who built it, and sale of land to the person who leased it. Essentially, this presumes disposal of state land if we're providing for 30 years use building a cabin and the wherewithal to set, to sell to the person. Isn't that kind of what the definition of the disposal of land is?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. Yes, I mean, this is getting it to disposal. That is, I think, the goal for a lot of the individuals. Some people can't afford to pay for the survey and appraisal costs and maybe the purchase price for land. So this gives them an opportunity to find a piece of property and decide maybe they don't want to purchase it. Maybe they want to just use it for camping and they decide this isn't somewhere where we want to invest money. And so they could then close that, remove their structures, close the permit, and then maybe go somewhere else that they would decide would be a better location for them and their family.
Follow up, Representative Sadler.
So at the point of the end, the presumed end of this process, would there be a need for the commissioner to issue a best interest finding, justifying disposal, permanent disposal of that state land?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, this bill does give us an exemption from going through the 035E written finding. We would still have to write some sort of decision. We do that already with some of our other authorization types. We still write a decision. We still go out for public notice, but it's not as prescriptive as 035, and it doesn't have the requirement of public notice under 3805-945.
And that, to the chair, that's a lot of citations, and I'm not sure all the members of the committee understand all those. You might, in your position, know them also. That means that, again, someone who got the lease, went through 30 years, would not have to get a best interest finding for disposal of the land, and there would not be the necessary public notice, or not public notice that people might otherwise expect of disposition of state land.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, it doesn't require it per the statute, but per the Constitution, there is a requirement for us to public notice. So we would still public notice these actions. And of course, all decisions made by the department are appealable. So a decision would need to be drafted. It just would not need to be drafted per the statute currently on the books, which is 3805035.
Okay. And also, if I could,
Representative Sadler,
through the chair, Director Collins. So this would the lessee have the exclusive right to occupy the leased acreage? I suppose they could probably invite friends over. Would they be allowed to let someone hunt commercially on this recreational site? What limitations or conditions would there be on the use of this land?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, a lot of that's going to have to be worked out in our regulations. There's nothing in statute that really states that they cannot use it for commercial purposes, but the intent of the legislation is for private use. Once it is sold out of state ownership, then the individual could do with it what they wish. But, you know, right now we have our program that we issue a lease for initially, and we do request them not to use it for commercial operations, but only for private until it goes under contract and we sell that property to them.
So to follow up, so there would be a request, but not an obligation. So someone could obtain a remote recreational site lease and could indeed conduct commercial operations on that. You might ask not to, but there'd be nothing prohibiting doing so.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that is something we could put in regulation. It could also be something that we put into contract that it's not to be used for commercial operations. It's going to be something that we'll have to work out if that's something we want to prohibit. It's not currently prohibited in the bill as written.
I would have more questions in the future about that, but okay, thank you.
Okay, so Director Collis, I thought of a question. Let's say I'm a pop star and I'm really, really rich. Just using a current day example. How many of these parcels could I lease? Could I lease like 10 or 20 of them if I was really, really rich? Like in a block?
Chair McKay, no. So the eligible applicant says that you can only participate in this program one time, and I think it says for 10 years from the time that you had participated. So let's say that you had a lease for 30 years and you decided you didn't want to purchase it. You would actually have to wait 10 years before you could apply for another authorization. So you yourself could only have one.
Okay. I was thinking you could have a giant hunting camp, you know. Okay. Representative Dibert.
Thank you. Through the chair, Director Collis. A question with the fiscal note, do you have an idea of how many of these that you might sell a year, or is there any projection of sales of these things?
Through the chair, Representative Dibert, right now our program is more, we do it every other year, and we have a staff of just a couple, two people. Now, this does require us to do it annually, and it also has us accepting nominations of parcels throughout the state. So right now, we have them more lumped together in an area, and so that helps us with our survey costs and trying to go out and actually doing appraisals and all that other work. But in this situation, since they would be so scattered, we do see that this could be a bigger burden. That's why we have more positions that we put out, especially the reclassification piece, the survey piece, because we'd have to write survey instructions for those that want to purchase. And so, yes, we do see that this could be a very popular program, as it would open up a lot more area for people to nominate, because it doesn't have to be already classified settlement. They could request that reclassification of land. And so it's quite a bit of land we still manage in our portfolio that this could potentially be us looking at drafting decisions for.
Okay. Representative McCabe?
Thanks. And sort of a follow-up to previous questions. So is there, and I kind of just didn't really look, I guess, but is there a minimum size? So if there's a small piece of land, 2-3 acres, that is state land, it's maybe in the middle of some previously sort of failed staking surveying areas that the state still owns, is there a way to nominate that?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, yes. So it's only up to 10 acres that you can nominate, so you just can't go above that, but you could be below.
Thanks.
Okay, Director Collis, just very quickly, Representative Rauscher has left us briefly, but looks like one of his questions, is there a typical number of sites the administration plans to offer? Maybe that would be per year. Maybe that question has been asked in a different form. And I assume that if you don't pay your monthly lease payment, you're ruled in non-compliance, and you lose the property. So can you just maybe give a little detail on those two questions if
sure.
you can?
Chair McKay, so right now we offer, let's see, so in 2023 we offered 96 authorizations. Previously, we had offered 108, and this is biannually that we do it. In previous years, let's see, like in 2012, we had 225 offerings. So it really just kind of depends on the area, depends on, so we want to usually make these larger, because of course, if you're trying to go remote, you usually don't want to have neighbors. Subdivision sales, they're usually about 10 acres. These can be anywhere from 5 to 20. And then when it comes to the question about making your payments, yes, if you go into default, then we could close the permit lease or sale. A lot of times we go under contract for the purchase. The state actually finances those, and we will terminate if people are not paying their monthly rents.
So you could have a situation where I build a really fancy cabin, and then if I don't pay the rent on the property, I lose both.
Chair McKay, correct. And we do have that happen already where subdivision sales, for example, where they have an annual a monthly payment and they get behind. We try to work with people as best we can, but then we have to terminate. We have a statute on the books that is referenced here in this bill, 3805090, that requires us to basically work with that individual, and if the property is over $10,000 in value, when we go to sell it, then the purchaser has to help make that person whole because they're getting that improvement on those lands, and that money would go back to that individual.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Director Collis, I'm looking at the sectional, and I'm seeing reference to the definition of resident. I think the sectional says it's in Section 8. It's actually in Section 6. But so the definition is resident means an individual who has resided in the state for 1 year before submitting an application. In this committee last week, we heard some spirited debate on what constitutes residency. Do you feel that the definition of resident as just someone who's lived in the state for 1 year is sufficient, or would the bill be benefit by a little more detailed definition of resident, in your opinion?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, At this time, I do think it's sufficient, just based off of other programs that we have. So, but we'd always be open to other ideas.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. As I said before, the amendment deadline is Monday, February 5th to my office, and I will hold House Bill 281 in committee until next week. In closing today, I thank you, Director Collis, for your testimony, and we appreciate you bringing this forward. Is there any other business before the committee? All right. Seeing none, our next meeting is Wednesday, January 31st at 1 p.m. We will be discussing Cook Inlet gas taxes and royalties. So you may want to make sure you attend that one. All right. We are adjourned at 1:58 p.m.